Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I am so excited to be here today with you. One of the reasons is we had a very exciting face-to-face talk show, which is my other show where we discuss race relations, we discuss politics. It's actually a spin-off from the Roundtable Talk Show. The only difference is on the Roundtable Talk Show, I play nice. On face-to-face talk show, we have those hard, uncomfortable conversations, but we do it for the good of mankind, I would say. We do it to learn about each other. So I want to introduce our first guest who you may have seen on face-to-face talk show. But before I introduce her, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. That's right. Go ahead and share the show. This information needs to be passed on to your friends, your family, and your network. So while you're sharing the show, I'm going to introduce our first guest, Miss Terry Abney. Now, when you see her, you will definitely recognize her face. She's been in so many movies, some we're going to talk about, from the movie Loving to Triple Nine to Term Life to Bolden, and where she got her start in Money Matters. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm only yourself.
I am excited to have you here. Now, this is the first for me. Typically, what happens is people come on the Roundtable Talk Show and they go, Sharifa's kind of nice. I might go over to face-to-face talk show. You did the opposite. Like you went to face-to-face and now you're on Roundtable Talk Show. What did you think of that show?
I had a blast. One, we were talking about issues within the country and within our community that I think are important and extremely relevant. But outside of that, like I felt safe and at home. I love Black people. I love people of color. I love discussing issues within our community and speaking about ways to implement change and how we can put our best foot forward. So I personally had a blast, but I also like to I like to engage in debates. So for me, it was fun.
That's why the show started. Paul had been a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show twice. And then he said, Sharifa, we got to do this again. Like, we got to do this in a different way. I love to debate. So I would never have done that show with anyone else aside from Paul. He's just amazing and open to have those conversations that I believe a lot of people often think, but don't have the ability to verbalize.
And I loved how self-aware he was and then willing to learn.
Now, I took a look at everything that you've done. Tell us about how you got your start in this industry.
In this industry, I got my start at Atlanta Models and Talent. But before an agency in Atlanta, before an agency ever signed me, I watched TV and films with my grandmother as a child growing up. She was a cinephile, or what I consider now a cinephile. She loved television, and it was a way for us to bond. And while watching TV, I was a kid who wanted to be one of the individuals on the TV. I was always dreaming of performing, and I was a really quiet and shy child. My teacher at 7 years old, told my grandmother that she thought it would be a good idea if I did The Wizard of Oz. I played the Wicked Witch of the West, and then I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow. The power that I got scaring the shit out of people running down the aisle gave me what I needed to want to pursue this as a child, just the love of acting in DC. And then from there, I would like to call it divine intervention. Everything always aligned. Auditioning for the largest performing arts high school in DC, thousands of students trying to get in, only nine of us are accepted. I'm accepted. Then I go to college. From there, I'm signed to an agency literally probably 5 days after I graduate. It was not always easy, and it still is not always easy. This is and a very interesting industry in that, I like to think of it as, for me, it's my first love, but a rocky roller coaster. You know what I mean? Like, I could imagine people who do drugs express like what the first high feels like, and you're always chasing that. But from there, I don't know. Like, it's the best lover and it's the worst lover sometimes, and I'm not letting it go. So, yeah.
Well, it doesn't appear that anyone is asking you to let it go anytime soon, you know, because I'm looking at, again, your bio, and I'm like, okay, I snuck on over to IMDb. I'm like, okay. I didn't see all of this before, which is good, because then, now I have to remain humble. But I want to talk about loving. I'm going to move on, but I want to talk about this. Was this a piece that you felt that you just had to do, or just something that just kind of landed in your lap?
So I believe wholeheartedly in divine intervention and timing alignment. For me, loving was a project that I absolutely had to do. And I knew at the moment I got the script from the first audition. I read it. I wrote on the front, the back of the script. I broke the character down. The relationship was very reminiscent of the relationship between my grandmother and her sister. They were best friends. And instantly I understood the relationship. And I remember the first audition having an acting coach tell me that I was going too far with some of my character's decisions. And it was not a person of color. He actually used the word ghetto. You're being a little too ghetto and aggressive. And I said, well, then I'm gonna be more ghetto and aggressive. This is a time period piece for the people who know nothing about loving, and it's based on the Lovings versus Virginia Supreme Court case in the 1950s. And they're the reason that we have interracial marriages in this country. Nothing about the performance was ghetto at all. The film was Oscar nominated. But his idea of me fighting for my sister, I guess because we are not of the, we don't have the same cultural experiences, he couldn't understand why I would yell at someone for taking my sister. And it's a really emotional scene. And I decided to go like 10 notches up instead of listening to his note. And that decision landed me the callback with Ruth Negga, and then, well, not with the callback by myself. And then the next meeting was just me meeting Ruth Negga, which I thought would be another audition. And Jeff Nichols, who is a phenomenal director, writer, he said, no, if you guys like each other, then the part's yours. And I was shocked because I knew all of the people who were contending for the part. Like, there were some really big names, and everything for me felt like divine intervention. My grandmother passed when I was 16 years old. She raised me. The street that I ran was her last name. The plantation that I ran on was her first name, or that we worked on was her first name.
There's a lot of things happen at the same time. It seems like it was emotional and connected. Now, Terry, I want to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And as you've been speaking, I saw a lot of emotion from our next guest and her understanding, I think, a lot of what you were talking about in that aspect of women's empowerment, or just empowerment. I want to introduce the author of The Pink Blanket, Miss Jamie Lorette. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great today. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Now, you were smiling when you were listening, when Terry was kind of talking, and I think mainly about the kind of whole divine intervention or empowerment. Have you felt that way?
I do. I feel the same way as well. I really believe in divine timing and things working out when they should work out. And yeah, for sure I do.
What made you decide to write The Pink Blanket?
I guess from a small child, I always had a dream of being a writer. Coming from small town Saskatchewan, I was a farm kid. I always had an imagination. I had brothers, so I was by myself. So a lot of creative things going through my head all the time, because there wasn't a lot to do here. And there also, I guess, when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of resources for those things or whatever. And I don't know. I just life got in the way. I ended up growing up. I had kids early. And so, you know, just the dreams you want kind of get put on hold. And I was getting close to 40, and I just, it wasn't going away. And so I thought, you know what, it's now or never. And kind of at the same time, an idea for a book did pop in my mind that just, it stuck, and it just kind of kept growing. My day job, I have a lot of thinking time. I'm on my feet, I'm by myself. And so, yeah, it just kind of went, and I don't know, like I said, everything just kind of aligned. I started writing, and as I'm writing, ideas started growing. People ask me about writer's block. I'm like, I didn't have that problem. Like, it just, everything kept coming. And something else that kind of, I guess, triggered the story was, it's based around domestic abuse, which is something I've experienced. I've had many women around me experience it. And I guess it's just, as I was writing an idea as well, the Pink Blanket Campaign, which is something I'm in the process of creating, is a campaign that helps women fleeing domestic violence. And it as well is based off of my novel Bits and Pieces. So again, it's just all back to divine timing and the way things align and all tend to fall into place. It's like, you know, as much as you want something, if it's meant to be, it'll happen. And if you truly are passionate about it, I think it finds its way to work itself out, and you got the universe that helps you along to make those things come to life. So it's pretty incredible. It's pretty amazing. And I'm just enjoying the journey now that I finally went after it. So
I definitely believe that, but I'm listening to you talk. I'm looking at you, and I'm honestly sitting here judging you. Because when you say domestic violence, I'm like, it could have never happened to you. Look at you. You're professional. You know, these things don't happen to women like you. Do you hear that often? Probably not to your face, huh? But I'm just saying, you tend to believe that.
It's the more I open up about it, because I am from a small community, you know, still don't like to, because they're from the same community. So I don't like to talk about those things, because sometimes it makes it uncomfortable. And I don't like that. I like just, you know, not an easy life, but I don't like to create animosity if I don't have to. And when you're dealing with people that aren't of always the best mind, you just try and you learn to manage them, I guess is the word I'm looking for. But as I talk, people are like, really? Wow. And then the next person's like, you know, I always wondered. And so you really don't know what people think. And I mean, I guess I sit here and as you judge me, that's your opinion. But, you know, people in my everyday life see me too. And it's easier now, because I guess it took a long time to find self-esteem. And when I was writing, my husband at the time was like, you'll never amount to nothing. I actually told him I wanted to be a writer one time. I, you know, said it, and he's like, he laughs at me. He's like, whatever. And at that point I just went, you know what, this is for me. And so I didn't say a word. I actually, until my book, about 6 months after it was published, he finally found out I wrote a book, and he's like, you didn't tell me. I'm like, no, it just, you know what, I did it for me, and I didn't need the discouragement. It's tough. It's a hard world sometimes. And when your self-esteem isn't there and your self-confidence isn't there to put yourself out in the world in a big way, I needed every ounce of all those good things to go through with it. And so anywhere that I felt that there was not going to be that, I just couldn't allow it in, or I probably wouldn't be sitting here today.
Well, yes, so. No, my apologies. I didn't mean imply that I don't believe you. I'm just saying usually a typically like a stereotype, because to me, and what I'm saying and judging you is you look so confident. Like in a room full of people, I would say, oh, Jamie's the most confident one. She's the one who has the most, you know, I know she'll have the answer. She's so professional. Like those are the things that I would just by looking at you, because you have this appearance of just having it all together. So when you come out and tell your story, it helps people who aren't as confident, or, you know, who don't have maybe the same strength to go out and tell their story. story in a published book. So I don't want you to take away that I don't believe you in any way. And I also don't want to put that view out into the world that I wouldn't believe someone who has suffered from domestic violence. I appreciate you being here, Jamie, and for telling your story. I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. I think we're making him a little nervous, all the women in the room on the show. But I tell you, I always get either five women or four women and a man. I don't know why. Maybe the men don't like talking to me. But I want to introduce our next guest, who is a master of about a million different things. We also talked about one of his products on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And we're going to talk to him in depth, or at least a little bit more in depth today. He is a personal trainer. He is a gym owner, a real estate developer, also digital marketing, skincare line. I'm pretty sure there's a whole list of things that he does. But today we're going to talk to Mr. Taylor Beach about crepes and coffee. Good morning, Taylor. How are you?
Good. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. Are you nervous now after that introduction with Jamie? I don't know what I'm going to say.
No. Not at all. I used to have a TV show and I never rehearsed anything. I think it's better to just go out and wing it, because then I'm not trying to remember what to say.
Yes, that's what I do. I wing every show. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Okay. One of the things that I want to know is this. You are a personal trainer. And one of the things that I've learned, or I've been told, is that successful people have some type of workout or health regimen in their life as a part of what makes them successful, and they feel different if for whatever reason they don't keep that up. What are your thoughts, Taylor?
Definitely. Yeah, no, I started working out a long time ago, maybe like 95, and I just do it now because I feel like I have to. Mm-hmm. Really, like, I like it, but I can't not work out. I just don't feel very good, so mm-hmm. I have to do it at least 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with it, I feel good. I feel like I can do anything after a workout, no problem. But sometimes if I don't train for a few days, then little things seem, you know, bigger than they are.
Mm-hmm. So you get irritated, and then people who are like, you know what, just go work out. Like, just go.
It's like, I have a lot of things going on, like you alluded to, and there's more. So I get overwhelmed. But after I train, I feel like I can still do it all.
So tell us, what is crepes and coffee?
Well, I'll sort of start at the beginning real quick. Started out as a trainer and, you know, grew with that and left the gym that I was managing, was Bally Total Fitness in downtown Toronto, and did well there and left there to open up my own studio and grew that. And I had three of them, just kept evolving with that. But you know, it just wasn't challenging enough. So I needed to do more. So I started to invest in real estate and grew that sort of holding to a number of different properties. And then sort of brought in another partner and consolidated and started doing bigger stuff like apartment buildings. So I was doing that and converting one into commercial to residential and converting into condos and selling those off. And within the building, we had a commercial space that we couldn't lease. So I thought, oh, let's just throw a coffee shop in there. And then it just sort of evolved very naturally. And I guess this is how I tie Marta back into it, because Marta, my girlfriend, you know, we've been together for 5 years. And the story behind the crepes and coffee is a bit of a love story, actually. When we first met, it was about, you know, maybe 5 months after we met. So usually that's still like, I mean, it's still amazing now, but you know, 5 months in, it's fantastic, right? And
you got a brother or something? I'm sorry, I got distracted. Yeah. Like, I need that. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm listening to the love story, Taylor.
So she gets an incredible promotion. She tells me that she's got this promotion, dream job, but she has to move to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, not cool, but you know, what do we do? So she negotiated with the company that I was able to, they were going to pay for me to go visit her every month. So that was pretty awesome. So she moved and I flew and spent a week in Switzerland every month for 18 months. So when we'd go, or I'd go, we would take, you know, 3-day weekends, 4-day weekends, and jump on a plane to wherever. We went every place in Europe, and we'd usually just find like dessert cafes, like that serve dessert crepes, and pretty much lived off those, that and good coffee. There's lots of them over there, but not so many dessert crepe cafes around here. So as we're doing that, just traveling around and seeing the world, you know, fast forward to her coming back to Canada and starting her own company, the Lulo Organic Skincare. And then I had this space. So we thought, why don't we try to recreate our European date nights and try to bring in, you know, the crepe design from Switzerland. The music's more like Amsterdam and Ibiza sound, interior decorations from Prague, coffee from Budapest, like just try to pull everything into this cafe. And that's it. It's been going really, really well. And now we have people looking to help me expand it. And I'm selling the sort of how-to model to get started with the story and all the tech and everything that goes behind it.
So basically, if I'm understanding you correctly, are you saying you're going to franchise?
Franchise, licensed, similar things, just different from the legal perspective. But I guess, yeah, franchise, you can wrap your mind around what that is. Yeah.
I like the whole story aspect, you know, because one of the things that I always help my clients with, no matter what the product is, you have to create the story. You know, yeah. What's the story behind it? Because people, no matter what, they are moved by their emotions. And people don't think so. You know, they're like, oh, well, guys don't have emotions. They're like, oh, give me a shiny car. I'm like, okay, but they get the car to get the girl. You know what I mean? It was like, there's still that underlying emotion that they want to get. So I like the idea of this cafe where you come in, it's romantic, you can have a date, you know, I don't know, maybe some, because in Europe, they do a lot of serenading and things that we don't do in the US.
Yeah, well, if you've ever been, you guys have seen like locks, like love locks on like every railing, you know, they're everywhere. So I have a railing, a replica of the one in Prague that we put a love lock on. So I've got it filled with people's locks and all our pictures. There's so many pictures everywhere that we took from, you know, off the phone. But yeah, that's true. With marketing, as you know, it's a story and you're always trying to think of the story, but this one just happened. It was just true, you know, story. So we used it and people love it. And that's, I think, definitely now it's been 2 years and how we're growing. And we know, we hear a lot of the time, like, oh, I love the story.
Yes, but see, first of all, I was like, I don't know, maybe I might go there and visit if I happen, but you got me with the love locks. Once you mentioned those love locks, I'm like, I don't care where in the world I am. At some point in time, I have to go visit just so I can add my love lock. One day when I get married and get me a man, I'm going to give me a love lock too. But I also wanted to talk about what you said in reference to, you know, it's a story. One of my friends said to me one day, she said, Sharifa, you have such an interesting life. And I told her, I said, my life is no more interesting than anyone else's. It's just the way I tell it. You know, so when you tell that love story, that's what's going to make people connect to it.
Yeah, we definitely try to bring people together around love and the love of travel. So we've got, you know, community groups where we just talk about like, what's your favorite meal that you had while traveling? So everyone, you know, typically has a meal that they remember when they were someplace that was so awesome. So the love of food and travel and just love brings people and keeps people around, I guess.
And especially in the middle, I don't know if we're in the middle or the end, I don't know where we are in this global pandemic, but especially in a global pandemic, we definitely need more love. Now, Taylor, I am going to come right back to you and to everyone who's tuning in to watch this show live. I definitely appreciate you. If you just got here and you didn't hear the intro at the beginning, please go ahead and share this show because our guests are sharing their stories. They're inspiring, educating us. And we want to make sure your friends and everyone in your network doesn't miss out on everything we have on the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to go ahead and introduce our next two guests. They're going to be joining us to share their story about how they got to get together to help parents. Now, it's a little bit more detailed than that, but I think that was the motivation because as a parent myself, even though my children are 23 and 26 now, thank God. Yes. Sorry, I needed a moment with the Lord. But I understand what it's like being a parent. So we're going to talk about maybe instructions, but it's the Parent Compass with Cynthia Muchnick and Jen Curtis. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Have you ever had an introduction like that?
Well, no, not really. We've never been on a show quite like this. This is such a fun roulette, meeting interesting people.
I've never heard the show described like that, but if you go to ashery.com in a couple of hours, you're going to say this fun roulette type show.
I will, for sure.
Cynthia, how did the two of you meet?
So Jen and I were introduced, I don't know, about almost 15 years ago by a mentor of both of ours. We both work in educational consulting. So we work with teenagers and tweens, kind of helping them navigate school and culminating through high school and ultimately the college admission process. So we love teenagers. That's our sweet spot, and we are their cheerleaders and their advocates. And Jen and I were introduced by a mutual friend and just became work colleagues, would meet for lunch every once in a while, maybe, quarterly. And then everything really took a turn last March in 2019 when the Operation Varsity Blues, also known as the college admissions scandal, hit the newspapers. For those who haven't heard about it, it was basically about 51 naughty parents who were, overzealous in trying to use illegal means to get their kids into what they consider to be elite colleges. And it really just kind of exploded on the news. Jen and I called each other. I'm in Northern California, she's in Southern California, and she was my first phone call when the news broke. And we spent about 90 minutes on the phone together. I was in a parking lot on my cell phone, parked and sweating. And we just felt this overwhelming sense of disappointment and sadness for actually the kids of all of these people who, these parents who had kind of demonstrated that they didn't believe in their own kids and their own kids' talents and their own kids' accomplishments, and felt the need to almost from their own standpoint, do illegal things in order to help their kids get into school. So that we were, without focusing on the bad stuff, Jen and I decided we had to speak out. We had to help get parents back on track. And in our years of doing college counseling, while nothing illegal occurred in our businesses, we did see hints of panicked parents and bad behavior in some of our, some of our own clients through the years. And speaking for their kids and kind of stealing the voices of their teens. And so together, we decided that day in the parking lot, we were going to write a book called The Parent Compass. And we were going to teach parents the proper etiquette and guide them through kind of a new movement to regain that relationship and positivity. And, when their kids leave their homes, try and preserve those teenage years in a way that doesn't, resort to, kids feeling misunderstood or not heard or not seen by their parents. So this book is geared towards parents and parents, especially of tweens and teens. And so we've been really pleased it came out about a month ago. And so we've been on kind of a wild book tour together. And it's not exactly what we anticipated. We'd hoped to be in school classrooms and in auditoriums speaking to parents, speaking to organizations and businesses, but now we're Zooming everywhere and, meeting interesting people along the way. And we've been really pleased with just the way the book's been received. It's been a fun journey. It feels really good. And Jen has been the most amazing partner in this journey. We've really, had a great experience. I'll turn it over to Jen so she can share a little bit of things that have happened in the journey too.
No, I'm gonna let Jen speak. I'm gonna bring Jen in, but I had a question for you.
Sure.
Roulette before we moved on.
Okay.
One of the things that I heard in your voice and what you had to say is that you at least appear to be very passionate about this whole issue. And it seems also that you have a certain view on this issue. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't ask certain questions that I believe the viewers are asking. Like, okay, number one, also keep in mind that I'm in Long Beach, California. And you know what I mean? So that's LA, Hollywood, UCLA. Those are areas where certain lifestyles tend to be kind of expected. I'm not looking at just the legal aspects or the question of right or wrong, but there are certain people who looked at the situation and just simply said, that's the way things have always been done.
So those are really good comments, Sharifa. I too am a parent. So I should mention I have a 22-year-old, a 19-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 14-year-old. So I'm in the throes of raising teens and some teens that have just, you know, graduated college and joined the real world. And yes, California is one of the crazy hotbeds that produced a lot of
I like your honesty.
A lot of this bad behavior. And so we are, Jen and I, our goal in the Parent Compass is to help fix a piece of this much larger problem, okay? We're speaking to parents to try to help them better connect with their teens in a positive way that doesn't cross those blurry lines and doesn't make those mistakes. And Jen and I aren't saying we're experts in doing that. We have learned even through writing and through parenting that these are really hard things to do sometimes. And so we interviewed thought leaders, psychologists, you know, we interviewed school counselors, teachers, heads of school. We pulled together kind of all of these resources into one place so that parents could have a guidebook or a toolbox of how to better behave. But the larger system, the college admission system, the stress in high schools, the stress put on our teens to kind of perform and fill out boxes and check off lists of volunteering and getting great grades and giving back to their communities and working and all of those things, there's a much bigger problem certainly out there that would need to be addressed. And people call this back door or this side door something that's been going on for ages with legacy, with families who donate lots of money to schools. But those, while those aren't necessarily all perfectly acceptable, they are not illegal, right? So what was being done in this college admission scandal, and again, the book really doesn't focus on the scandal at all. It just was the catalyst for what made us say, oh my gosh, what has happened to the parent population here? How are these parents parading their kids around as trophies that are direct reflections they think of who they are? There's this, you know, bumper sticker and school sweatshirt cocktail conversation that people want to have. And we just saw this generation of kids becoming really damaged and listless and sad and feeling not worthy and, you know, of that. So that's really what we're trying to kind of address here.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Yeah, so I was just going to jump in, but Cindy ended up getting to it. I think it's really important to understand that the Parent Compass is not about the college admissions scandal. It is about parenting behavior. It is a response to the fact that for too long in our own offices, in our profession, we have seen kids who lack things like grit and resilience and intention and whose parents schedule all their, you know, dentist appointments and any appointments with us. And they're just too over involved in their kids' lives. And we're seeing, you know, 18-year-olds who are not ready to go off to college or wherever they're going to go because they don't know how to live life on their own. And so the point of the Parent Compass was to help parents understand their role in creating that type of child, as opposed to different choices that they could be making to facilitate things like self-advocacy and responsibility in their kids. And so we actually start out the Parent Compass with a chapter asking parents to first, before they can even read the rest of the book, to first look at themselves and why, what they bring to their parenting. How were you raised? How were academics looked at in your home? What, you know, what personal biases do you have? What shortcomings did you have? Maybe in high school, were you not the student you wanted to be and that's why you're forcing your child to be? Or were you an excellent athlete and that's why you know, your child in your mind has to be an athlete, because we felt that they couldn't go through the rest of the tools that we had in the book until they really had, you know, sort of evaluated themselves. And we call it physician heal thyself. You know, before we can help someone else, we need to make sure that we are in the right place.
Interesting, interesting. Jamie, did you ever go to a point in your life where you had that physician heal thyself moment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was moments that I just, you want to give up because you just feel like you have nothing. And so, yeah, it's just, there was a time where it was, I wouldn't say so much as moments, which I mean, they do come, but there was a moment where I just went, okay, this is me. This is my life. What do I need to do to be better? And being better, that meant my kids were growing up. They were at the age where they seen what was happening. They were not healthy. And I look at that and think, oh, you know, and so there's just lots of aspects where it's just, I just really had to sit back and go, okay, I need to change this, and this, and then just start working one bit at a time. And then once you start to find those in yourself, you know, bettering yourself, then you start to see the ripple effect, right? My kids are happier. They're seeing me happier, and you don't want them to fall into what you fell into. And that's something that I regret, but also can appreciate that I guess not shame, one sense it is, but the next is it's, I also seen, and they were able to see me go, no, you know what, this isn't right. And to stand up for myself. And honestly, when I told them, they were the only two people that knew I was writing a book. They were so encouraging, and they just were like, and so I knew that when I decided to make myself better, I was making them better too, because they were seeing me healthier, if that makes sense, I guess. But yeah, definitely.
That is beautiful. And I definitely don't see any shame in it. I see a lot of strength in it, especially because you're going to help so many people. And that's one of the things I often talk about, is everything that I went through in my life wasn't for me. It wasn't for me to look back and go, oh, woe is me. Sharif has been through this. No, it's when somebody comes to me with their story, I can empathize with them. I can look in their eyes and say, you know what? I may not have been exactly what you've been through, but I understand, you know? So it's just the empathy and their strength. And there's power in that. I know Terry also is using her voice and creating her voice now, not to just have characters, not that that's a small thing, but right now she's focused on creating her first feature film, which is in development, Victoria. So there's also strength in stepping out. So can we talk a little bit about Victoria, Terry?
We can talk about a little bit about Victoria. I also have two short films that are out right now. So I want to highlight those really fast. Black Mental Health Matters 2, and Stop Killing Us. So as an artist, I know I said earlier, I love Black people. I love all people. I absolutely love all people. And I have, I'm of mixed descent. I have like every race within my family, literally, but I have a deep affinity for Black people and telling, or people of color. And I love telling our stories, narrating our stories from our perspective, taking control of the lens and, telling them from a place of compassion, because a lot of times they're not. We are exploited and our stories are told in a way that makes us appear downtrodden. But, you know, like systematic racism exists. And outside of just systematic racism, they like to take our images in media and they circulate only the negative images, but they never highlight the love or how we got there. And so choosing to look at stories from a perspective kind of like you, Taylor, like creating love stories in film. And it's not making it beautiful or it's telling the truth, but from a place of compassion. But let's talk about Victoria.
Let's talk about, I have no idea about Victoria.
So Victoria is the first project that I started writing 3 years ago. It's actually based on my mother's story. It follows a young girl who is struggling with identity and generational curses, which we have within all of our bloodlines. But her not knowing who she is and her watching her mother be abused by her father. She thinks that she's escaping when she meets this guy Black. And then that leads her down a path of drugs, and she has a daughter, and now she has a choice to make. Do I want my daughter to continue down the path that I'm on, not knowing how to cope, choosing the wrong men, not speaking up for myself, not fighting for her dreams. So it's in development right now. My writing partner, Rashonda Joplin, and I are working really hard to get it out, to get funding. It's a journey when making a film, but it's a passion project like all of my projects.
It sounds interesting. You'll get it out there. You have the drive. You're not going to stop. So you'll get it out there, and then people will appear to help you get it out there. I think that's amazing. Now, you mentioned Taylor. Taylor, again, the only gentleman on the show. And I'm looking at Taylor. He's all yoked up. Have you always been this confident? Yes, you all got those. You know what I mean? I see. You know what I mean? But we talked about confidence. Jen and Cynthia talked about children and not being confident. Have you always been this confident, Taylor?
I think, yeah, when from birth to about the age of 10, confident. Then when my parents split up and step boyfriend, you know, came in down here, and then started working out, and then got back up, I think.
So I see like a story in there somewhere. You was just like, I'm going to the gym, I'm going to be big. He can't. Okay, I don't know. We're going to leave that alone. I'm just saying, because people have certain perceptions, like our perception of Jamie, of being this successful, confident woman. So Taylor, we got to know, have you always been like that? That's why we were wondering. I think that's interesting.
No, I think confident for me anyways, it's fleeting. Some days you feel more confident than others, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're confident today. You're in your zone today. I can feel it. Because, you know, I think part of that is the love and telling your love story. I met Marta. I can see the love. I understand. I get it.
Yeah. 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 Well, I don't know. It's honestly, it doesn't come easy, confidence, for me every day. But I work at it. I do the things I need to do. Meditate, I work out, you know, and those are to help keep that good.
You meditate?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
About an hour.
For an hour?
Yeah.
I meditate for 15 minutes. That's how long I can sit still.
I take a bath.
I mean, I started with just 10 a day, but it kind of grows, it grew from there.
See, you work out, you meditate. These are the things that successful people do. This is why people tune into the Roundtable Talk Show, so we can find out how to become successful and what works. Now, I want to go back into Crepes and Coffee and find out a little bit more about this licensing. In your ideal perfect world, where do you see Crepes and Coffee?
Well, what I think... is really, you know, like the selling feature of it. Franchise is typically, you know, $50,000 or more with all these lifetime royalties. So that's franchise. Licensing would be more like, you know, here's everything you need for 10 grand. And then with monthly coaching, they're on to open it up. I think what's different or unique about it is everyone, not everyone, but most people like dessert and most people drink coffee. And that's what we're selling. And the footprint that you can build out the model is small. I think the ideal spot is about 900 square feet. So you're not filling up a big spot. A lot of it has transferred since COVID to you know, our own delivery systems and takeouts. So you can pump out a lot with a small space. So I think that's attractive for someone who's looking to get into this. Having everything done, the menu, all the marketing and the tech side behind it, I bring that too. So as you guys probably know, that's a whole nother world, but if somebody's looking to start this, that would come with it. So, you know, it's just, I've got all these other things going on, but this is one way to keep this one growing. So I thought, okay, we'll do that. And
I like that. Have you ever been to Long Beach, California?
Nope, I haven't been to California.
Okay, you have to check it out. I love Long Beach. I've been here for about 20 years, and I love the aspect that it's so quaint. You know, we have a lot of people walk around Long Beach. We have a lot of those small little coffee shops. People just kind of hang out by the beach here. So we may have to get a crepes and coffee down here in Long Beach and see what we can do to create some love stories, because I know people want to go out, have some fun, meet a new person. I think that would be the ideal date for them. What do you think, Cynthia?
Oh, I'm just smiling because I used to commute to Long Beach to drive my son to soccer practice, 45 minutes each way. So I used to spend a lot of time there too. And yeah, I think that sounds like a lot of fun. You know, people are looking for ways to connect and in safe ways. And, you know, we could all use some interaction since we're spending so much time on our screens. But it's been fun to get to know new faces on the screen. So
yes, that's what we do here. Jen, would you have a date at Crepes and Coffee?
Yeah, so actually it's funny when you were talking about the love locks, my husband and I went to Italy a few years ago, actually a little more than a few years ago, but we remember that. I don't think we had a lock at the time, or I don't know. I don't remember, but it was super cool. I think it was when we were in Cinque Terre, and we spent so much time at little dessert places, coffee places. I have never had better coffee in my entire life. So yeah, I think we would totally go to a place like that just to just transport us back to that like pre-kid time where life was so much easier.
But yeah, it's a moment.
Everywhere you go, the coffee's really, really good, right? And we found a place in Budapest where we're like, this is the one. So we actually, for the first few months, we're getting it shipped from them, but then found out where they were getting it changed. But really good coffee I had brought that lock with me secretly on the trip.
Okay.
When we were there, she's like, oh, I wish we had a lock. I'm like this, like one of these. I pulled it out.
Got me. You know, in Paris, they have the lock bridges too. It must be a European thing. And there were so many locks on the bridge that the railing started to give way. They actually had to take down, they had to cut out all of the screen of the railing and all of the locks and transport them somewhere else and put up a new railing, because so many people were the weight of the locks. And sometimes you write in a Sharpie the date or a little message on the locks. So everyone's had a lock bridge experience, I guess.
Yeah, I tried to promote it, like come in and do it, and then we give you free dessert for doing it, but then just like tag a picture of you doing it. But so to get more.
That's good. Great marketing.
I like that. I thought someone was about to say something.
Oh, I said that was great marketing.
Oh, yes. Yes. Terry, I want to go back to the movie Loving real quick, because on this idea of love, I think that's the theme of today's show, just love, self-love, find love. I don't know. Maybe there's someone who loves me so I can get married and find me a key, a lock, whatever this thing is. But the reason I love that movie Loving was that I felt that they could have approached it in so many different ways. I felt that they could have approached it just from the legal aspect of this is the case, this is what happened. But I love the fact that they showed so much background in the movie and how they showed the love story. And at the end of the day, how love conquers all. Did you feel that or see that in Loving, Terry?
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that made me love or fall more deeply in love with the story. Jeff Nichols has a way of trimming away the fat and getting right to the heart of what really matters. And at the center of that story, Richard and Mildred Loving were two very simple people, two very quiet, loving people, even though Richard, he had a look that appeared aggressive. He was a really gentle soul, at least that's the account that people gave when he was alive. He was really soft. For him to have loved this woman of color during that time period, they faced a lot of adversity and a lot of hate. They were woken up in the middle of the night with guns, dragged out of their homes. They were exiled from Virginia, sent to DC. They were teenagers, she was really young. He was older, a little bit older. But at the heart of that story, there was an undeniable, unshakable love that kept them together. Even when they were ripped from their families And the only thing they were fighting to do was to be able to go home and love each other, to be able to return to Virginia and to love one another. And I guess when you think about love stories, a lot of times in cinema or film, it's the love story where there are just issues within the relationship, but they're fighting for love. They had outside influences that were attempting to deter them from loving each other because of the color of their skin, that was saying it is wrong for you to love one another because this woman is a Black woman or she's colored and he's a white woman. And the interesting thing about that one, you should be able to love whoever you want to. If you're Black, white, orange, yellow, green, purple, or if you are a member of the LGBTQIA community or whatever, like whoever you are, it's your choice. You should be able to live how you want to in ways that you want to. But I think that, again, it was just such a quiet story. And, you know, love has the ability to conquer all, to diminish hate, to melt hearts.
Change lives. I mean, I think that's what it is.
To really change lives. And so even just listening to Taylor's story about love, I just put out a short piece, Stop Killing Us, and that story focused on the love. I could have focused on the murder of this young Black man, but I didn't. The idea for me was to tell the story to, again, shift the perspective and the narrative. And it starts off with these two people in bed and they're just going through their daily routine, but they're in love. We stay in bed with them, different shots for maybe 2 to 3 minutes of the piece. The piece is only 6 minutes. And then they're brushing their teeth. They're going through their daily routine. And it's essentially a silent film because there's only two lines in the entire film that come at the end. And by the time you get to the death, which I never show the police officer's face, never show a gun, everything is expressed through my co-star's face when he's in the car. And then there's a cut to a funeral scene. And then there's a cut to the reversal of her reliving that day and the love that they shared. And so many people said to me, wow, I've never seen Black love shown in this way. When a Black person has been murdered by police, the message or the images that they circulate are of us being thugs or him wearing a hoodie and attempting to justify why this life was taken. Or he, in the second grade, they try to create a narrative or express why he deserved to die. In the second grade, he punched his teacher. They'll go as far back as they can to essentially demean him or tarnish his character or her character, whoever it is, when we're humans and when people of other races make what we like to call mistakes, because we are all human and things happen, or they get stopped by police, the stories end differently. You know, they get slapped on the wrist or nothing happens, or they get a ticket if they get a ticket. But our stories end in he was reaching for his wallet, because that's what you do when you're stopped. You know,
it's a very interesting conversation. It's a conversation I definitely want to go more in depth, which is why we love when you show up on Face to Face Talk Show.
I know.
Would love to have you back. Please let me know when you are available. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who was watching this show live, as well as everyone who was watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Jamie.
I just want everybody out there that's whatever their dream, whatever their passion, wherever they're at, it's just, you can do it. I just want everybody to believe in themselves, and whatever you need to do that, find it, because it's worth it. And I think it's so incredible when we can, you know, wherever we're at, just to put our ego aside and just tell ourselves that we deserve what we want out of life, and just just to find the courage to chase it. That's what I want people to take away from where I'm coming from. Cause I just, every day is so rewarding now that I actually just chose myself and what I wanted.
That is so beautiful. And that is true love, self-love, and love for your kids. This is beautiful. Where can we find a copy of your book, Jane?
So it is available, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Chapters. There's over 35,000 retailers online. I've got a copy, like it looks like this. This is the pink blanket. I do have a website, jaylynaddy.com. Yeah, pretty much if you Google it, you'll find it. So
thank you, Jamie. Jen, what do you have for us?
I think when you said that love was the theme today, I really do think it is from what everyone said, including the Parent Compass. Our intention in writing the Parent Compass was to help parents step back, and that's kind of what the message that I would like to leave today is to parents to take a step back, understand that your love for your kids should be the most important thing, not your own ego and what you you wish for them, but just put your love for them first. And I want to just talk a little bit about Cindy and I are co-hosting a podcast, The Parent Compass, on smartsocial.com podcast. And we chat about positive parenting behavior, poor parenting behavior, little nuggets and takeaways. We have some really awesome guests, so we would love people to stop on by.
How do they find it?
You can Google smartsocial.com podcast with the Parent Compass. And then you can also go to our website, www.parentcompassbook.com.
I'll have to check it out. Then one day I'm going to crash the party because I want to sit there and have a chat with you guys.
Do it. We would love to have you on.
This is my favorite topic. This is my favorite topic because I'm 44 and our parents told us that children are to be seen and not heard, right? That's what we were told. And that our generation is so focused on being our children's friend that we don't want a parent, you know. And I always raise my kids that you can say whatever you want to say to me. You just can't say it however you want to say it. But it's very important for me to have that communication as opposed to saying you are to be seen and not heard, because I believe, and I'm very sexist, I admit to that, sorry, Taylor, but especially women, when you take away a female's voice, when you take away her ability to say anything, you take away her ability to say no. So that is one of my favorite conversations. I would love to chat with you more on it. Cynthia, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I definitely, please come. We this was sort of earlier a theme in our talk had to do with things kind of happening just
divinely
because of timing and divine intervention. And Jen and I were interviewed on a Smart Social podcast. It was one of our very first interviews for our book about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago now. And at the end of the interview, the host, like you, said, hey, you know, would you guys like to use a corner of our platform and have your own show? And we were like, oh, we had just been guests. And we now have this show where we've had amazing, we actually have the authors of Unacceptable, which is two Wall Street Journal reporters who wrote a book on the college admission scandal, a nonfiction, you know, study on the college admission scandal. We have author Christine Carter coming up. We have Kelly Corrigan, Lori Gottlieb. We have these amazing psychologists, and we're sort of living our dream, interviewing and learning from other thought leaders and you know, people on their perspectives on parenting and raising teens. But you can also follow us on Instagram at Parent Compass. We're really trying to generate more of an audience there. You know, we're a little old school. We also have a Facebook page, The Parent Compass. And LinkedIn has our names, Cindy Mechnick and Jen Curtis. And as Jen mentioned, parentcompassbook.com is where you can learn all the different things we're doing, including links to the events we've participated in. We want to come speak at your schools, at your businesses, connect us to your groups. And we'd love to share the Parent Compass movement with whatever audiences are interested to hopefully make parenting a little bit easier and a little bit better for our teens.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Cynthia. Taylor.
Yes. Yes, where can you find me? or
what do you have for us? Do you have any words of advice, words of what's the takeaway before we get to the dope?
This particular show, I would say that if there's somebody watching this that's looking to, you know, drive their own ship, start their own business, there's so much to do, obviously, behind that, especially having done it. Luckily, when I started this one, I was already 20 years sort of doing this and had, it sort of went as easy as you could expect, I guess. But for somebody who's new, you know, it's overwhelming to try to start it yourself, especially from concept to the build out to the marketing and all that. So I think this is a good option for those people who may have ever thought about wanting their own dessert cafe. This could be a good alternative to get that started.
Hey, Taylor already started following us. Yay, Taylor. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt or take
away. No, he's got a cool. Go ahead, Taylor.
We're going to follow Crepes and Coffee now, Taylor. So okay. We'll be friends.
I'm going to be craving dessert crepes now.
Yeah, now I have to go follow you because I feel bad that I wasn't the first one to follow you from the show. But Taylor, where can they find you if they want to find out more?
Okay, it's crepesand.coffee. So there's no .com. It's crepesand.coffee. That's the website. And that's how you can contact me and, you know, find out more information behind that. And also I got to plug Marta and our skincare ladies. Check it out. It's truly, honestly, legit, amazing product that we put together. It's called luloskin.com. So L-U-L-O. skin.com.
Thank you, Taylor. Terry, go ahead and take us out.
All right. For me, I think the thread today was just love. So love conquers all. And listening to Jamie, self-love. But and I think we all have to work better from the self. Everything else grows and flourishes. So self-love is important. So meditation. I meditate every day also. Working out endorses happy endorphins, like it brings forth happy endorphins. So doing what you need to do to be the best version of yourself. I'm a creative, so I don't believe in no. So if someone tells you you can't, you can. And the only thing you can't do is what you believe you cannot do. You're unstoppable. The universe is limitless. There are no boundaries. Ain't no limits, bruh. I'm on social media, Terry Victoria Abney. And love and light.
Yes, I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I definitely want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who was watching in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support, but don't just watch the show. Please go ahead and share the show and support our guests. Visit their websites, follow them on social media. It might just change your life. You never know. Now, if you want more information on how I can assist your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.